Today's political world has become the textbook definition of us against them, scoring wins, however those are defined now, as well as preventing that other side from advancing. That's now addressed by many means necessary. That, sadly, is becoming more accepted by more Americans, yet it was not always this way. My next guest with his new fantastic book presents the life and political career of a U.S. senator who saw the term reaching across the aisle as, well, a lot more than some campaign throwaway line, and through his service in the Senate, racked up a legislative track record, I say this with full confidence, will never, ever be surpassed. The book is Titan of the Senate, Orrin Hatch, and the once and future golden age of bipartisanship. He's a New York Times bestselling author, successful TV producer, William Doyle. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Hello, thank you. It's great to be with you.
And you can follow William on Twitter at WilliamDoyleNYC. Keep on top of what he is keeping on top of. Why did you select Senator Hatch as a subject? Because, I mean, obviously, having read the book, it's justifiable. But setting out for this, what was the catalyst?
Well, the catalyst is the fact that my first job was in the United States Senate on Capitol Hill as a lowly intern for Senator James Buckley, who was a third-party conservative senator from New York for one very historic term. And three years ago, I read a news account of Orrin Hatch, who had recently retired, that said he was the most productive senator in history since the Vietnam War. And I thought, wait a minute now. Orrin Hatch is one of the strongest conservative, fighting conservative senators we ever had. How was he able to out-legislate Ted Kennedy, who comes in number two, and all the other senators in terms of passing laws? That seemed like a paradox to me. And I explored the paradox, and I came to the conclusion that Orrin Hatch not only started from pretty much total obscurity 42 years before he retired as a Salt Lake City trial attorney who was totally unknown. He'd never been in the local papers until he announced for Senate. And he retired as the number three person in line to the presidency as president pro tem of the Senate. And I thought, how do you do that? And what was the secret of his success? Because he passed more laws, co-sponsored and sponsored more laws than any other senator. So, if greatness is measured by productivity or legislative achievements, he's the greatest senator of the modern era, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with his policies. But then I was stunned to learn that he regularly worked not only across the aisle, but he got great things done for the United States that were not liberal and not conservative by working with liberals and conservatives and leading them to big legislative solutions that benefit all of us without much ideology attached. For example, in 1984, he and liberal California Representative Henry Waxman together essentially created the modern generic drug industry, which means I'd pay 10 cents on the dollar than I would otherwise if it wasn't for generic drugs for the medicines I get. It was called the Hatch-Waxman Act, and it was a brilliant example of liberals and conservatives getting together, thinking creatively, and not being afraid of working with the other side. And that happened over and over with Orrin Hatch in big, big issues. Now, he held very firm to opposing abortion, to trying to balance the federal budget, which he came close to doing constitutionally on one occasion with an amendment, on conservative judges and gun rights. But he, on three or four big events, which is what my book focuses on, he did very dramatic things behind the scenes to push through, for example, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the greatest civil rights act since the 1960s. He personally championed and rescued at the last minute from being killed on the floor of the Senate, and he worked very hard with liberal Senator Tom Harkin and liberal Senator Ted Kennedy pushed that through. He opposed some of his own party in some areas to get legislation like this through. And there are other examples in his career where he did this that I think is great significance to our politics today, and it's what we should be requiring our leaders and candidates to do much, much more of, to stop viciously tearing each other down, which, you know, that's probably politics. It'll probably always be that way. But we need to challenge these candidates and politicians to be brave, to disagree with their own party sometimes, to disagree with us, God forbid, and to do things that are courageous and bold to fix big problems we face in America.
Wasn't the element of Hatch just really a simple ability he had? He would listen. He would want to hear what you had to say, and if he disagreed with it, he'd explain. If you could win him over, congratulations, you won him over to your cause.
That is so true. You put your finger on what many other senators, and I interviewed many senators who worked on a day-by-day basis with Orrin Hatch. I also went to the U.S. Senate Historian's Office, and I plunged into 10,000 pages of research on Hatch, on the Senate, the history of the Senate, and on other senators, which was an astonishing resource for my book, Titan of the Senate. But, you know, in the end, my book has a rosebud moment. You remember Citizen Kane and Rosebud, and the big secret was revealed. And I'll tell you what the secret was, because I think it's very important for us today. Another senator, Senator Gordon Smith, a fellow Mormon, told me, you know what Hatch had that many other people don't have is he saw the nobility in his opponents. He saw his opponents as noble people. And maybe that was a function of his compassion, of the fact that he grew up in poverty as a he eventually became a young Union man for 6 years. His father was a Union leader. He had compassion for hardworking Americans. The idea of seeing the nobility in your opponents is revolutionary. And if we could just open our minds today in the midst of all this hatred and viciousness, social media and campaigning and so forth, but what if we were to say, wait a second, not only might I be wrong sometimes, and the rest of the world knows that, but maybe my opponents are not Nazis, my opponents are not communist terrorists in America because they're liberal Democrats. Maybe they're noble. Or maybe they come from noble impulses and good intentions, and regardless of what the issue is, once you open up your mind to that possibility, at least you could start doing astonishing things for the nation. Great example of that is 1990, Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy, who loved each other like brothers, but they fought each other like brothers too. Sometimes they would scream and yell at each other. Usually it was Kennedy doing the yelling, but they realized we've got to help HIV/AIDS patients in a very, very big way. The federal government was slow to react, and they knew that. And the two of them, as brothers, pushed through what was called the Ryan White HIV Comprehensive AIDS Resources Emergency Act of 1990. It's, you know, it's a mouthful, and it's not on everybody's lips today unless you have HIV/AIDS, because that bill and its reauthorizations that was rescued by Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy, that bill today benefits 500,000 HIV/AIDS patients in the United States, half of our patients, and it's the poorer half that needs special support and education and treatment and medicine. So that's an example of a piece of federal legislation that can work beautifully over decades, that comes and goes, and you know, Orrin Hatch got no credit for it at the time. But again, he, you know, it shows you what can happen if you work with the other side. Sometimes you can shape American history in a very good direction. That's an example of bipartisanship, and I think we need it more than ever today to start fixing the big problems America faces. Now, you know, bipartisanship is not always a good idea. Vietnam was bipartisan. Iraq and Afghanistan, going in and getting out, were both bipartisan, largely disasters. Federal aid to childhood education was a failure that continues to today for the last 20 years, but was a Ted Kennedy, George W. Bush project, and it has never pushed the needle on results. So it's not always a good idea, but bipartisanship can create our greatest moments. Civil rights in the 1960s. That was a Republican victory as much as it was Democratic. The Marshall Plan under Truman and the creation of NATO, that was pushed by prominent Republicans helping Harry Truman. Republican support for, and Democratic support for, arms control started by John Kennedy and Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. That was a very good example of this. And the things that Orrin Hatch did with Ted Kennedy and other Democrats and Republicans are shining examples of how bipartisanship can create good in America and why it has to come back, and we've got to stop screaming at each other. And maybe just for a second we can think, you know something? Maybe the other side is not Marxist or fascist or Nazi. Maybe the other side is American, and it's our job as leaders or citizens to persuade the center and to persuade even our own side that there's merit in the other person's point of view, exactly what you said in your question.
And certainly, too, if you haven't gathered already by listening, yes, William does include great civics lessons, not just life lessons, throughout his book, Titan of the Senate, Orrin Hatch and the Once and Future Golden Age of Bipartisanship. I'm reading your book, William, and the first thing, not even halfway through, I'm thinking, my God, what would this country have missed out on if Orrin Hatch stayed a lawyer and never went into the world of politics?
According to disability rights activists, you would have no Americans with Disabilities Act, which, by the way, has inspired the world and shaped the world, because over 100 other nations were adopted legislation and action very similar to the Americans with Disabilities Act, which, as you know, outlaws employment discrimination against disabled men and women. It created curb cuts for easy transit. It created closed captioning and elevator assistance and on and on and on. But Hatch wanted to make sure it didn't hurt business. And he fought for protections for business in that legislation. So he steered it toward, I would say, toward the center, which can be a very good place for a legislation. That's how it usually gets passed. But you would also, in answer to your question, you would have no HIV/AIDS federal commitment on the scale of what happened in 1990 and when it happened. It would have been significantly delayed. That's not according to William Doyle and Titan of the Senate, my book. That's according to the senior Senate AIDS advisor at the time, who was inside the room fighting for this legislation. And he worked for Ted Kennedy. So, I think it's an astonishing story of a man, a very good trial attorney, a young, firebrand conservative who realized there are some issues that really are not ideological, some issues, and you've got to tackle them, not just try to stop everything because it's got a Democratic or a Republican label on it. But, sometimes being an effective senator means standing up and stopping something. Like standing, it doesn't just mean passing laws. It can mean stopping laws that you think are bad for the country. And the biggest example of that historically is, again, a drama that my book opens up with, that Orrin Hatch ran this drama behind the scenes in 1978 on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Orrin Hatch walked into the Oval Office and told Jimmy Carter, don't push this Labor Law Reform Act. It's going to kill the two-party system. And Jimmy Carter said, no, we're going to support it. I've got the AFL-CIO. I've got Democratic Party. I've got a lot of Republicans behind it. We're going to push this through Congress, and you can't stop it. And Orrin Hatch was afraid that if this bill went through, suddenly unions in America would have triple the power that they had before this legislation. And he said, wait a minute, I'm a former union man, and the unions have enough power as it is. Besides, at the time, they were deeply infiltrated by organized crime. That's a separate issue. But, Hatch thought, wait a minute, FDR gave them the Wagner Act, and they have lots of power, and they have lots of due process. Let's not give them much more, because then the Republican Party will get buried by dues that will flow from Democrats to unions to Democrats, and we'll get killed in all our races. And Hatch said that's not good for the country. So as this young, he was a young brand new senator in his early 40s, and Republicans were telling him, "Don't waste your time. You can't stop this." But he waged a guerrilla war, basically a filibuster, to stop this. There were three votes, four votes. He lost each vote, and in the end, in a drama that's revealed in my book, Titan of the Senate, Orrin Hatch managed to block this big piece of legislation. And ever since then, that's 43-plus years ago, unions in America have never had a significant expansion of their power at the federal level. So whether or not you agree with the result, it shows the impact that he had on the conservative side. And what that did was that gave him the power, the credibility inside the Republican Party to not only be thought of suddenly as a presidential candidate, but to have the gravitas and the respect to then go through the 1980s and 90s periodically doing these great legislative achievements with liberals, with Democrats, through negotiation and compromise, which is the heart of the American system. The American system is not about hatred and violence and demonizing the other side. It has never been outside of the Civil War. We're drifting toward that again in America, and we've got to remember our better angels and our better impulses, which I think Orrin Hatch often exhibited and implemented. And I think it's a very good model for what we need in Congress now, in our candidates now, and in America going forward the next couple of years. Cooperation, compromise, open minds, listen to the other side, and treat the other side as noble sometimes, which is a radical revolutionary idea. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, now it all makes sense to me. And I've never heard that before in American politics, by the way, but we need it, and it's true.
I want to have William on the show with his book, Titan of the Senate, Orrin Hatch and the Once and Future Golden Age of Bipartisanship, for several reasons. One, it's a fantastic story of a fantastic political career. It's a lesson in civics in a variety of ways that you get throughout the story in Titan of the Senate. And I also wanted it to hopefully address you, the voter who idolizes one of these occupants of a political office who, oh yeah, you know their name, but can you name any legislative achievement by them? Well, probably because most of them who have very well-known names have very little, if any, legislative achievement, which is the polar opposite of what Senator Orrin Hatch accomplished in his career and is certainly an inspiration for others to follow in his steps as close as is humanly possible, because when you look at his track record, his accomplishment list, it's sizable, intimidating, but certainly one to be emulated. Titan of the Senate, Orrin Hatch, and the Once and Future Golden Age of Bipartisanship. William Doy, you have done the man a great honor. You've done him justifiable respect and revelations about his work, which he did so much in quiet that needed to be public, and you've done that for us all to learn from. Thanks for doing that, for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Great talking to you.